Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an exciting founder, you know, a founder that he's building something really interesting. I mean, a founder that is repeated, a founder that has also been through the, you know, full cycle of building, scaling, you know, and also exiting. And now he's at it again. So we're going to be learning quite a bit on what it looks like, you know, raising your first round of financing, the seed, getting ultimately their domain. You know, that was quite the experience, their first users, and then also meeting his co-founder who ended up becoming his CTO with his company now. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Ben Hoffman. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Alejandro. Super excited to dive into everything.
So born and raised in Lexington, South Carolina. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
It's crazy. So my father's American and my mother is an immigrant from Caracas, Venezuela. And so I grew up in a super small town in South Carolina. And I always felt like, you know, I didn't quite fit in. My mom's from a huge city. And my dad was, you know, local to the area from Columbia, which is the capital. And, you know, my parents were entrepreneurs as well. So I grew up in their business. I grew up every day after coming home from school, I would go to their office and I would watch them run a small business where they were selling factory parts that they would buy from Canada and then ultimately sell to manufacturers like steel and cement manufacturers in Latin America. And so I learned a lot of my initial lessons in entrepreneurship from them. And funny enough, they had remote employees in the 90s. This is when they were still using like typewriters, copy machines, fax machines, landlines. And so it was very interesting to kind of grow up in that environment. But I always knew because of that, that I wanted to start my own businesses.
So how was it like, you know, to experience your parents going through it too? I mean, through the ups and downs, because I mean, indirectly, you had that exposure. So what kind of insights you got and at what point were you like, I think I like this. I think eventually I see myself doing this one day as well.
You know, as a kid, it was mostly, if not all, a positive experience. I loved seeing my dad, you know, selling on the phones, my mom running the back office, like balancing the books and things like that. So it was a really, really positive experience. And then they would always have different types of like guests at our house who were either the sons of their customers who were doing an exchange program via university or just friends of the business that would come in. So I had this very kind of interesting worldview where I thought, you know, everyone ran businesses and this is just how people operated. And seeing my parents work together was really interesting. And it was really, really helpful because I got to spend a lot of time with my parents growing up. And so some of my first memories are like, you know, learning how to use Whiteout for like a typewriter or like learning how to use a copy machine and things like that. And so it was a really, really fun way to grow up. And I would always pitch these different ideas. I would see a business that I thought was really great. And I was like, hey, like mom and dad, maybe we should think about like taking this franchise or this concept and making it a little bit different. And I'm sure eventually it got annoying to my parents, but those are some of my first memories, and it was really, really interesting. And I think it shaped my worldview on what it meant to actually do something professionally. I never knew kind of any other way from my earliest memories.
So in your case, I mean, you got the access to that problem solving, obviously, you know, being exposed to that. And even at 13, you know, you were already building the first thing, you know, kind of like putting the components of computers together. You know, how was that?
Yeah, so my dad had one of the first laptops. I think we were a Windows family. So, you know, I never really even knew what Macs were until I moved to New York. But my dad had a friend who built computers. And so he introduced me to his friend, was like, hey, like you should build your own PC because I was using the family computer. And I was like, hey, I'm tired of going into my parents' room to use the computer. I want, you know, my own device. And, you know, obviously every kid back in the day wanted their own computer. And so he taught me how to build computers from components. And I remember just being blown away by having access to the internet, almost like unsupervised as an adolescent. So, you know, there's a couple of different ways you can go as a kid who gets access to the internet for the first time. One of those ways is, you know, If everyone remembers like torrenting and downloading music and like Napster and LimeWire, you could download everything from music to videos to like software. The other side is just like learning new skills. When I discovered like forums and like YouTube, it was crazy. Like all of a sudden you could learn anything on the internet. And that was really, really empowering. And so I kind of went somewhere down the middle between like, you know, the light path and the dark path. And so I would hack a lot of software, but then I would learn how to use that software. Things like Photoshop, or learn how to build websites and learn how to edit videos, make music, do graphic design and things like that.
So let's talk about the dark path too. You know, the path of dropping out of school. I'm sure it was a tough conversation with your parents as well. So what happened there?
Yeah, so, you know, I was never that good as a student. I was always really good with computers. I'd always get really good grades on my tests, but I would never want to do homework. I was never really interested in kind of the traditional route. I think this had to do something with my parents and seeing how they operated. But I always knew that I wanted to do something with technology, with computers. And, you know, early in my like journey on the internet, I learned how to produce music. And so I dropped out of school when I was 20 years old and I moved up to New York. And you can imagine like how much of a difference that is coming from like a small town in South Carolina, coming to a big city like New York. And you live in New York right now. So you can imagine like it's like the most vibrant city in the world, probably the best city in the world. I still believe that even though I'm in San Francisco now. But yeah, dropping out of school was scary. My parents weren't super happy, but they always trusted me. They always knew that like I had the potential to do something, and I'd always prove it with like these kind of random adventures I would go on, whether that was like producing music. Eventually, I started working with Sony UK, producing radio music. And that was a skill that I learned from the internet. And so they saw that and they're like, okay, we trust Ben. We think he's going to do the right thing. But my parents, my grandfather, they were always trying to get me to move back to South Carolina. And I was like, there's no way. I landed in New York and I was obsessed. I was like, this is the greatest place I've ever been to. I'm never leaving. And so that was definitely one of the more impactful things that happened along my journey. And I'm glad I did it because it really forced me to grow up and it forced me to figure out like how to start my first business.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about Ripe. You know, how did Ripe, you know, the idea come together?
Yeah.
And what was that process like, you know, when you finally, you know, like pulled the trigger and said, okay, let's go with this one.
Totally. So it's funny, like the story of me founding Ripe and the story of founding Contra are very intertwined. But you've lived in New York for a long time and you I'm sure you know, it's a rite of passage to live in a really, really bad apartment. Like you have to do it at least once. Everyone who has lived in New York has this experience. So I was living in this four-story walk-up in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It was a four-story walk-up. It might have been 800 square feet total. It was a four-bedroom, two-bath that we converted into a five-bedroom. So it was a really, really, you know, tight living quarters, paper-thin walls. The heat barely worked. The walls were barely insulated. You know, the air conditioning barely worked. And so really cold winters, really hot summers. And at the time I was producing music professionally. And, you know, I was barely, I think I was making like 2,000 British pounds per month. So like, you know, in New York, that's poverty, right? So like, even at the time, the exchange rate wasn't that great. And so we would rent out one of the rooms on Airbnb. And this was back when Airbnb had this really cool community of like founders and creators and designers and engineers that would go back and forth between San Francisco and New York. And so we would rent out this room to make extra money. And so one of the people that I met through this process of Airbnb was also a creative engineer. And he had worked, I think, for Apple. He had worked on Google Plus and Google Maps. Then I think he worked for this one product called Airtime, which was Sean Parker's kind of startup back in the day, the guy from Facebook. And he introduced me to this API called OrderX, which basically allowed you to connect to points of sales at different restaurants. And I know you know New York, like they're very health conscious. Being from the South, everyone's into like fried food and like this is a very unhealthy lifestyle. So one of the things that really resonated with me when I moved to New York was the fact that everyone was obsessed with fitness. Everyone was obsessed with wellness and eating well. And so my first business was this idea. It was like a mobile app similar to Uber Eats or like Grubhub or Seamless or like DoorDash, but you can only order healthy food. I was using this API called OrderX. Long story short, it gets shut down It was a Google Ventures funded company. But anyway, they couldn't make it work out. So I had built this mobile app, launched it. We had users. We were like, you know, selling food through this API. Then all of a sudden it gets shut down. And we were forced to like say like, hey, like, how are we going to build a company? And so we slowly pivoted into making like bulk orders for companies. And so we would like ride our bikes around New York and go into different startups' offices and say like, hey, like, does your office need like lunch? And so one of our first customers was this company called, I think it was called Spring. It was like an e-commerce store, and they gave us a $10,000 order. And we were like, whoa, this is crazy. That's more revenue that we've ever made, you know, with this mobile app. And we just scaled that up. And so it was bootstrapped. I think our first year we did $1 million in sales, and then we doubled and then doubled again over the next couple of years. And then ultimately scaled that business. But along the way, we never had any money to hire full-time designers or full-time engineers, but we built a lot of software. So we would always hire freelancers. And so that was an interesting business that kind of led me to Contra ultimately.
So then let's talk about, you know, also getting that visibility into the full cycle of obviously of companies. So in this case, you know, it was a, around 2019 or so, you guys were at about 6 million run rate. And then all of a sudden, the idea of going through an acquisition, you know, with Hungary, you know, actually came about. So walk us through, you know, what was that process like? What was your takeaway, and what kind of visibility did that give you to the full cycle of building, scaling, financing, and exit?
It was really interesting because we had this business that was profitable. It was like, you know, we had built it on like blood, sweat, and tears. It was an absolutely brutal business to run. If you think about it, like, you know, when you hear startups talking about putting out fires, you know, we ultimately built a 9,000 square foot kitchen on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and we would literally put out fires. Like, there was actual fires that we had to put out in our kitchen. There was actual issues with our gas, with the way the water lines would work into the building. So I learned a lot about just like construction, funny enough. But also I learned a lot about like business finance, because we would have a lot of these companies. We got our first acquisition offer in 2018. It was from a company that was on the West Coast, and they did the exact same thing that we did. But they basically positioned their product as, they had like a machine learning model that would recommend the best dishes for different teams. And they had raised $20 million. And I think at the time we had raised like $150,000 total. So we were always very cash poor. Like, you know, we had small margins, but we would make a lot of revenue. And it was crazy. Like, this business was valued at a 10x of their revenue, and we were valued on an EBITDA multiple. And so we would get these acquisition offers for a business that was doing a similar amount of revenue to us, but they had just so much more cash. And that taught me a lot. So that's the first time I went out to Silicon Valley. But then ultimately we worked with an M&A advisor to try to find like, you know, a more suitable acquirer. And so that was really at the end of 2019. And then 2020 hit, and then COVID happened. And you can imagine the market for, you know, in-person office food or office catering went to zero overnight. So we went from doing, you know, $600,000-$700,000 in revenue per month to almost nothing, literally overnight. And our final, like, you know, net 30 invoices were coming in. We're like, oh, wow, this business just changed fundamentally. And so we ultimately found a home with Hungary. Jeff Grass, the CEO over there, was like, hey, we really are interested in your contracts. We know that you're going through a hard time. And he really helped us kind of get the acquisition across the line. But it was a crazy learning experience because we were, you know, flying high, you know, really tight margins, running a profitable company, supported by freelancers, and then ultimately getting acquired. It was a huge lesson, but it was also a lesson in like the power of venture capital and what you can do when you have a bigger war chest, when you have more options. And so ultimately, you know, my first company was a success, only in the way that I learned a lot from it. It definitely wasn't a life-changing acquisition by any means.
So then, I guess, what was the biggest takeaway from that rodeo with Rype?
I mean, definitely running a P&L, running a profitable P&L, understanding operations, understanding sales, understanding what it actually means to keep and retain customers. Some of our customers we had for over 3 years. And so I think that, you know, there's just so many lessons. It's kind of like my trial by fire MBA, as you could say, because I didn't graduate from school, but I really learned how to operate and build a brand. And I think that that was definitely super, super valuable. But along the way, we were supported by freelancers. I was using sites like Elance and Odesk, and ultimately this platform called Crew.co, which inspired the creation of Contra.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So then talk us about the creation of Contra. You know, how did the whole idea, you know, get incubated, and what did it look like, you know, to really, you know, bring it to life? Because I mean, at this point, you know, you guys already had, you know, some good experience, you know, you knew how to do things. And I guess, what did you do differently here?
Totally. So I'm going to go back to my really, really shitty apartment in Brooklyn, New York, to kind of talk about the other side of the story. And so when I found out about OrderX, I also found out about the concept of freelancing. So my same friend who showed me this API also was freelancing himself. And I remember one time I asked him, hey, like what do you do for work? Because I knew he was an engineer, but I wasn't sure like how he was making money. He was like in between jobs. He's like, oh, I'm just building sites for different startups. I think one of the months I asked them, I was like, you know, how much are you making doing this? And it was somewhere between like $20,000 and $30,000 that month. And I was like, what? That's crazy. I was like, I had no idea that you could make that much money just building websites. I've been building websites since I was a kid. Can you teach me how to do this? And so he actually got me my first referral client building a WordPress website. At the time, I told you I was making like 2,000 pounds or British pounds per month, which was like nothing in New York. And then all of a sudden this project was like a $2,000 project, but I could complete the work in a couple of days. And this blew my mind. I was like, this is crazy. I was like, I have this skill set that's actually worth something. And I just need to find more clients. And like at that moment, like a light bulb clicked. I was like, this is amazing. This is how I'm gonna fund my first business. And this is an entirely new way of working. I remember coming home for the holidays and showing my parents, I was like, look, I'm like working with this person in South America. I'm working with this person in India. Like, and we're friends and we're talking on Skype, and they thought I was crazy. They're like, this kid has absolutely lost his mind. He's like going to totally just like fail here. But I was so obsessed with the idea that you could work with anyone from around the world. And like, that's really what Elance and Odesk, which ultimately turned into Upwork, enabled. But along the way, I saw there was all these flaws. Like there was, you know, there's this commission fee that made everyone want to take it off platform. Every time I found someone, they're like, hey, can you pay me via PayPal instead? And I was always like, I don't really know this person that well, but they really are insisting that you know, we take this off platform. And that's when I saw the fundamental flaw with this business model. And so I don't know, are you familiar with the company Taobao? It's a subsidiary of Alibaba.
Sounds familiar, yeah. But I guess for the people that are listening to maybe like, if you could give some more insight there, that would be awesome.
Yeah, so it's like this buyer-seller marketplace based in Asia. It's a subsidiary of Alibaba. I think it's one of their main revenue drivers, and it's completely commission-free, or at least it was at the time. And I remember looking at this business model, I was like, wow, this is really, really interesting. I'm sure that there's a way to apply this to the labor marketplace model. There has to be a better way to kind of facilitate these transactions, because the biggest problem was, you know, both sides, like if you think about working with a knowledge worker, there's a lot of trust that needs to get built, right? Like there's like multiple conversations, you're exchanging contact information, and it's just so easy to take things off platform. But when you take things off platform, there's a couple of problems. Like you're hurting the ecosystem because there's not that like feedback loop of like, hey, how did each person behave in this transaction? And then there's also like a security risk, because like you no longer have a contract, you no longer have protection if things go south, right? And so like, how do you incentivize people to actually keep things on platform and build into an ecosystem? And so that's where the idea of Contra came from. So originally Contra started, the initial idea for Contra was a zero commission freelance platform. And that's how, you know, we initially kind of like pitched this idea, but it was inspired by my own experience using all these different marketplaces and constantly getting the request of like, hey, like we'll save money. I'll give you a discount, or it'll be faster. It'll be better if we take this off platform. Everyone would ask. And I was like, this is crazy. There just has to be a better way. And I knew that this style of working was going to go mainstream and it was going to become big. I just didn't know when that was going to happen.
So then, how would you say that the business model has evolved to what Contra is today? I mean, how are you guys making money today? And how would you explain the business model for the folks listening?
Yeah, so Contra is a platform for skills. So if you think about the way people used to work, typically you would create a resume and you would list the different experiences that you had at different companies. So like maybe I worked at Facebook, and then before that I was at another company, and before that I was in another company. Today, the landscape has shifted a lot. Like now people, what they actually care about when you're hiring someone, you want someone who has skills. You might want a video editor. You might want someone who works in a certain technology. You might want someone who's a product designer. You want a very specific skill. And so Contra has evolved to be this platform for skills. And so it's almost like a professional network like LinkedIn mixed with like a marketplace like Upwork, but we're completely commission free. And so on the independent side or the freelancer side, we give people the tools they need to run their business. There's kind of like three core jobs to be done. One is managing your identity and building credibility. The second one is managing your business, things like invoices, contracts, proposals. And the final one is like managing your demand. So like whether that's inbound or outbound, how do I get more business? How do I get more work? And so with Contra, you can do all of those things. And so we have a tool called Contra Pro that you can subscribe to. It's freemium, so it's free to use Contra, but if you want better access to identity tools, if you want better business tools, if you want better access to the network, you can pay us a flat fee of $29 per month, and we're completely commission-free, so we don't take any of the money that you earn on the platform. Then on the flip side, companies, when they're working with independents, they typically want to know that this person is verified. They want to know who this person has worked with. They want to know, like, is this person trustworthy? So we help companies create networks, private networks of verified independents and freelancers that they can tap into as a team. So it's a true workforce management tool for this new flexible way of working. And so that has a price range between $199 to $499 a month. And we have companies like Framer and Webflow and a bunch of creative agencies using this product to manage their flexible teams.
So how much capital have you guys raised to date for Contra?
Yeah. So today we've raised around $44 million. So we've gone from seed to series B.
And what has been the experience like going from seed to series B? How have you seen the expectation shifting and, you know, all of that?
Yeah. I would say like the hardest part of the fundraise was our seed round. And I say that because, you know, when we first started Contra, it was a side project. So I started in 2018. Thinking like, hey, there has to be a better way to work with independents. There has to be a better way, a better ecosystem for this use case. But at the time, like, there was no remote working. Everyone thought like the freelance industry was kind of like, oh yeah, it might be a thing, maybe not. And so everyone actually thought that Contra was a really bad idea in the early days. So when I was trying to raise capital in New York in like 2019, it was really, really hard. We got a lot of no's. A lot of people were very skeptical of the idea that anyone was going to work remotely. A lot of people were very skeptical about the idea that like anyone was going to work in a freelance or a contract capacity. And so I probably made like 300 to 400 versions of our seed deck over the course of a year, and just continued to pitch and pitch and pitch. And I was also building a product at the same time. So, you know, it took us from 2018 all the way till the summer of 2020 to actually get our seed round done. And like I said, we probably had, you know, 100 no's along the way. And then finally, after COVID happened and everyone was forced to work remote almost overnight, everyone started like, you know, connecting the dots. They're like, okay, if everyone's working remote, then the way that we're working, the average relationship is going to change. So maybe there's something here. And at the same time, we started seeing a lot of growth on our product. A lot of our growth experiments that we were testing out at the end of 2019, early 2020 started really paying off. And so we started seeing an inflection in our version zero product at the same time that the fundraising market, the fundraising markets were coming back. Because I don't know if you remember, like pretty much between like February all the way until June, the world was like over. Like everyone was like, yeah, the world's ending. There's never going to be any more capital raised for startups. Like, you know, the VC world is completely shut down and everyone was in a massive panic. But then all of a sudden in June, cracks started to show and people started to see the light. They're like, okay, this actually might be the best time to invest in new startups, especially startups that are connecting this new global workforce. And so that's how we actually got our seed round done by Cowboy Ventures. It was really awesome to finally get validation that like all this hard work we had been putting in for the years before was actually being seen by other people.
So obviously with investments, you know, there's also, you know, a responsibility and they're backing ultimately on the vision. No? So if we're thinking about the vision here, you know, the vision that is getting investors, customers, employees, you know, enrolled really into the future that you're living into. If you were to go to sleep tonight, Ben, and you were to wake up in a world where the vision of Contra was fully realized, what would that world look like?
I think it would look a lot like the world we're living in today. If you think about what's happening with remote work, if you think about what's happening with AI, we're starting to see the default relationship or the way that people work together is fundamentally changing. Teams are starting to become smaller, and the skills you actually need to run a team are becoming larger and larger. And so we're in this world now where the skills needs for companies are wider than ever before. But the actual constraints you have in terms of the size of the team you can build are probably tighter than they've ever been. And so we're seeing a lot of people build these networks of people who are highly talented, highly skilled, and they're developing these relationships where you might work together for 3 months, you might work together for 6 months because there's not a need on either side. The company doesn't need this skill long-term. They actually just need someone with expertise right now. And then the actual employee can make more money taking that skill and working with more companies. And so we're seeing a lot of different interesting kind of outcomes from this trend. But I'd say like it's never been a better time to work independently. And it's also never been a better time for as a company to really think about your team from like a flexible, like kind of skills-based perspective. Because like there's like a global talent network now in a way that there's never been before. And so you really can find the best person with that skill that you're looking for. And it's never been easier thanks to tools like Contra. And so we're seeing a lot of like early stage startups adopt this. We're seeing a lot of creative agencies adopt this. We're seeing growth stage startups adopt this. And so all the way up into the enterprise. And so I think it's only going to become more apparent as like this way of work really takes hold.
So imagine if I was to put you into a time machine, Ben, and I was to bring you back in time, maybe to 2014 when you were thinking about starting something of your own. And you were able to have a sit down with that younger Ben and being able to give that younger Ben one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
That's a great question. It's very hard. I would definitely say it's okay not to know. I think I was very hard on myself in the early days because I didn't know the basics. Like imagine being like a 22-year-old and saying like, oh, you have to set up payroll. Like, what does that mean? Right? Or like you have to think about XYZ business operation. You have to think about accounting, or you have to think about your P&L, your all these different things that you kind of learn along the way. I definitely would have maybe told my younger self, like, invest in financial literacy earlier, because I kind of, you know, like I said, I learned in a very like kind of trial by fire way, which was helpful, but definitely stressful. And then I don't know if I would change anything, because, you know, the lessons that I've gotten along the way have been extremely valuable into like getting me to where I am today. And then the lessons I'm learning today, I'm sure will be applicable to whoever I am in 10 years. And so definitely I would say, like, you know, be patient, definitely continue to upskill, invest in financial literacy. But I don't know if I would, I probably would have pushed younger Ben away from the idea of creating a mobile app, and I would have gotten him faster into the more scalable business model. But, you know, it's hard to say because if you go back and change something, you never know what would be different today.
That's right. That's right. So Ben, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah. So you can email me at ben@contra.com. And that's just contra.com. Or you can just follow me on Twitter. It's just @_BenHQ. And you can shoot me a message there as well. But if you're looking for really any skill, you can find that on Contra. So definitely check us out. It's just contra.com. And yeah, hope you reach out.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, Ben, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.